morning. I'm Charles Osgood, and this is Sunday Morning.
For over 20 years, viewers on CBS on Sunday Morning heard those words. I'm sorry to be the one to have to tell you that it's no longer going to be the case. Charles Osgood, on the 23rd of January, passed away from dementia at the age of 91. For this edition of the New Directions podcast, I'm going to do the best I can to remember him by bringing in a couple of broadcasters who worked on Sunday Morning with him, and then showing him the way I enjoyed watching him, which was as a musician. The two instruments that he did play were piano and banjo. Give you some features on both of those. To get us out of here, I'm still working on a song, but it's gonna song from a video, that is, but it's going to be a classic. The man was a radio hero of mine. Charles Osgood Wood, as he was originally, has passed away at age 91. Remembering him on this edition of the podcast, and we'll get going right after this. For many years, St. Jude has been instrumental in helping families that have kids with cancer. For the month of February, it's going to be done locally. I'm going to tell you where. This is Terry Runyon from the podcast, here to tell you about Red X's initiative for this month. I invite you, when you purchase groceries at Red X, to round up your purchase to the nearest dollar to help with the expenses of parents that have kids with cancer. It is not an easy time. You've seen the commercials, I know. But I'm sorry to say, it doesn't just happen in commercials. It happens here locally too. The organization does a lot of work to make sure that families are taken care of. Kids getting having cancer, not a good thing. So, When you purchase your groceries this month here at Red X, please round up your total to the nearest dollar. Kids with cancer and their families would be very, very glad that you did. This piece is the main piece remembering Mr. Osgood. The reporter is Jane Pauley.
Good morning. I'm Charles Osgood, and this is Sunday Morning.
He was the admired, yet approachable host of Sunday Morning for more than 22 years.
The Osgood File. This is Charles Osgood.
And that reassuring voice of CBS Radio's The Osgood File for nearly 46. Charles Osgood knew his was a storied life. Born Charles Osgood Wood in the Bronx, he grew up in Baltimore. He remembered it this way.
In 1942, milk was delivered in bottles. The mail was delivered twice a day. And that boy named Charlie Wood had a paper route.
In the 1950s, he served 3 years as the Army Band's announcer.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
He had a love of music.
You are only as old as you feel. Want to see what Lucille is now able to do?
Playful poetry.
These are 1-inch pine boards, not just one board, but two.
And especially time spent chewing the fat with the likes of Julia Child.
Did you imagine that you were a natural for television when you first started doing that show?
I'm a natural ham, but this helps a lot.
And many others.
They come out fast, but, I mean, it's a fast world.
We have actors and artists, not just politicians.
His beloved Sunday morning was the beneficiary of his passions.
Our Sunday mornings are filled with such things. We have...
I cannot think of anything that has given me more pleasure professionally than Sunday morning, because first of all, it feels great to be part of something that people love, and I know that they do.
I've sung this song, but I'll sing it again. I knew I'd be leaving, but I didn't know when.
He is survived by Jean, his wife of 50 years, their 5 children and 6 grandchildren, and all of us at CBS News.
Been a long time.
Charles Osgood was 91 years old.
And I've got to be drifting along.
He was an influence on me also. When I first started back into internet radio in 2018, I accidentally, on purpose, I guess combined, found myself closing my shows by saying, "See you on the radio, and until then, so long, everybody." He always ended it with, "We'll see you next Sunday morning. Until then, I'll see you on the radio." We're going to close this segment. Just a second here. Just a second. Just a second. I forgot to do that. There we go. Get that off of there. For the rest of this segment, I thought it might be kind of good to listen to the words of 2 people that worked with Charles Osgood on Sunday morning, Mo Rocca and Jim Axelrod, both from CBS. Here's their segment.
Some sad breaking news. Veteran CBS newsman and former host of CBS Sunday Morning, Charles Osgood, has died at the age of 91. Osgood's family said he died today at his home in New Jersey from dementia. Osgood anchored the CBS Sunday Morning for more than 2 decades. In all, he spent a total of 45 years here at CBS News. He was also the host of the long-running radio program, The Osgood File. Joining us now over the phone is CBS Sunday Morning correspondent Mo Rocca. Mo, thanks so much for jumping on and talking to us a little bit about Charles Osgood's legacy. He spent his career both on the radio and television. Talk to us about, from your perspective, you also have so many different talents that you bring to the show and many other platforms. How was he able to connect with so many people in so many ways? Talk to us about his unique legacy.
Well, you know, I remember on his last broadcast, he shared with the viewers sort of what I think was a secret to his success and his connection with the viewers, which is that when he spoke to camera, he always imagined that he was speaking to his sister, to his kid sister, who he was very close to growing up. So he didn't speak loudly. He had an intimate connection to the camera and to the audience because it was like he was telling stories, sharing stories that he had with his sister. And, you know, our executive producer, Rand Morrison, once said about Charlie, he said, "Charlie is the last great gentleman of broadcasting." And that always stuck in my head because he really was a gentleman in the best sense of the word. I remember he and I did a little musical act together at Birdland, a jazz club in New York City. And I went over on a Saturday morning to his apartment to rehearse. And it was like 10 a.m. or something. And before I knocked on the door, I could hear the strains of him singing "Embrace Me, My Sweet Embraceable You." And you got the sense, this is just something that Charlie Osgood did each morning. Got up, put on a bathrobe, sat at the grand piano, and played Gershwin. So that's who he was.
That's such an incredible memory. And it also kind of sheds light on the ways in which Charles Osgood was able to bring just calm, peace, just something optimistic, something bright, to even the most disturbing of news. And joining us here in studio is CBS News Chief Investigative Correspondent Jim Axelrod. Jim, just what Bo was talking about, I mean, even in breaking news, even in disturbing news, he always just seems to do things differently and keep people calm.
Yeah.
What do you recall, and how does that talent come about?
Well, you know, just to echo what Mo was saying, there was a genius about Charlie in the sense that broadcasting is something that unfolds at the highest level. If you do maintain that accessibility with the people you are broadcasting to, and so many people broadcasting, and in the era where Charlie Osgood really sort of was coming up, there was almost a formality.
Yeah.
You know, that broadcasting, that stentorian tone.
Hello, my name is
Kevin. We'll get back to it here in just a little bit. I'll fill in for about 5 seconds and say that the man was about as low-key a news anchor as I've ever personally heard. Back to Jim. Soon as we get it up. He made wearing a bow tie very fashionable as well. I listened to a lot of his. Here we go.
He was much more, as I say, accessible, but conversational and approachable. I remember, as I was starting out here at CBS, the fact that I was going to be doing something live with the great Charles Osgood was so intimidating, right? Like, there were giants here, and he was certainly one of them. And talking to him was, how was I going to get a noun and a verb in the same sentence? And then you talk with him, and you realize, well, wait a minute, this guy couldn't be more approachable, more conversational, more someone that you can say accessible. And so it sort of was a good lesson to me that sort of helped shape and guide my approach as well, which is, just remember, you're always just communicating to the person next to you. And that was, as I say, something that was his genius.
I mean, I hear you say this, and to me, you are a great writer, somebody whose scripts I have studied, and I imagine that coming in, one of the things that he's remembered for was the writing, of course, and keeping sentences short, words short, just being direct.
Economy of language,
right.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, the verse,
yeah.
Famously rhyming, especially in the Osgood Files. Talk to us about just maybe other lessons that you might have learned.
Well, he was, to your point, he was musical in his approach, and I'm sure that patter of rhyme, which allowed him to, write some extraordinary verse, spoke to this overarching approach he had, which was economy of language. And there's a good lesson for anybody who's coming up and trying to develop a broadcast skill set and a philosophy that undergirds their writing style, and that is, less is always more. Charles Osgood was a high priest of less is always more, and it made him not only effective as a broadcaster, but for young people in any organization, it's always easy if you can say, you know what, do it like he does it, because that allows you to sort of fix in your mind as you're developing your own sense of how to communicate a model that works and is effective for really good reasons. So do it like he does. Do it like Charles Osgood did.
Now, I want to bring in Mo, because in just what you were talking about, Jim, it's the most memorable people in broadcasting or in television have just a diversity of skills. Most people don't come from that broadcast journalism background. He was an economist by study, a musician at heart, a poet, a songwriter. Mo, you too, and I'll tell you, I just saw you on stage at the Wait, Will You Don't Tell Me show in D.C. I was way up there in the audience hearing you make a very creative show, and yet, you're not a traditional correspondent, but you are part of a news magazine show Sunday morning. Talk to us about how Charles's diversity of talents, how his music, also made the experience of viewing him, of listening him, so enriching.
Well, I think what he did as host of Sunday Morning is you felt like you were attending a show. He was sort of a showman, I think, with all those different talents that Jim and you and I have been discussing. And, you know, writing, he would write that verse, those rhymes, and his sheer delight in it. It was almost like he was an impresario or something, and a word that sort of fits him, just the way that he dressed. He wasn't being costumed. I mean, this is stuff that he just embodied so organically. And there was also kind of an interesting combination of just, you know, the warmth that Jim was describing, but also just a kind of propriety. I mean, all of us on camera, the three of us have the experience, I'm sure, because we, you know, we get to hear from people on the street what they think of the show, because we're the ones that they're seeing, so they know to come up to us and say, oh, I love that show. And a lot of the time I try to get about Charlie is, you know, from people that seem to appreciate the fact that he had a kind of propriety, that almost like a father figure. And, you know, that, and I can tell you that when I was in his presence, I would sort of stand up straight. I would feel like shirt tails just hang out, because this is Charles Osgood. And, you know, that's increasingly rare. I mean, you know, stand up straight, you know, son, this is Charles Osgood. Like, not that there was anything ever severe about him, but he did things right. So you should do things right when you're in his presence.
I mean, and he also, as what you're talking about, that perhaps fatherly figure, he also voiced famously the book Horton Hears a Who, and
yes,
loved participating and narrating children's books. There's something to that, too, in feeling that comfort from a storyteller.
Comfort.
Mo is making a really important point here, and that is that you need, as a broadcaster, to always be authentic, to understand who you are and not be something else. Now think about it. Charles Osgood followed the great Charles Kowalt, and the temptation may have been, oh my goodness, this is another giant, and while Charlie Osgood certainly was an established figure in his own right, imagine stepping into a job that somebody else's footprints were clearly in that landscape. But Charles Osgood could only be Charlie Osgood. And there's a lesson to broadcasters who are developing now, which is to understand who you are and communicate along those lines. Not try to be someone you're not, but double down on who you are once you understand that. Charles Osgood's record of success was grounded in this thorough understanding of who he was, and he was probably incapable of deviating from that, and thank goodness who he was an embodiment of all these wonderful qualities, and not just the newsman, but the poet and the musician and the gentleman. And so when you wrap all of that up into a combination, he was smart enough to understand, hey, I can only be who I am, but if you do that right as a broadcaster, that's going to be a foundation for remarkable success.
That's such a good lesson. That's such an important lesson, and it comes from either experience, it comes from failure, it comes from really pursuing it out of passion. I hear from students oftentimes, young students who are starting off in college, should I study broadcast journalism? I always say no.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? You're gonna be taught to sound like everybody else. You're gonna be taught to write a story like everybody else. Humbly, I'll share in my professional experience, I feel like I've had to break what other people told me how to do out of the whole formula. How would you both say that Charles changed journalism, the future of journalism, and the path for young journalists? I'll start with you, Mo.
Sure. Okay. I think it will work, but just quickly following up on the point that the both of you made, which is, you know, for Charles to have followed in Charles Kowalt's footsteps, for anyone would have been hard enough, but to have the same name, I mean, the reign of the Charleses, I mean, like at least if his name, you know, had been Lewis or something else, it would have been a little bit easier. But I mean, you know, he was being compared to him so much at the beginning, so it really tells you something about Charlie Osgood's sense of self, that he could pull that off and so quickly make the show his own. I think, listen, I'm somebody, and I know it's maybe non-traditional, but, you know, I think that television journalists, there is something performative about it, and it, because otherwise it's going to be uninteresting to watch. And so, and that doesn't mean that it's inauthentic, it's acting, but you know, it's a kind of communication. And so he just had this sort of, as we said, very, very warm quality that I think will air among, because I think probably the temptation in his era was for journalists, you know, to be gruffer or to be more just the facts, ma'am, which is important. But he imbued it with this kind of warmth that I think was, I don't know who else had that.
Well, he was certainly unique and adopted his middle name as his last name, as there was another Charles Wood already in television. That tells you just that, how he had to, you know, just decided to be his own person. Jim, tell us perhaps what you remember, what you want people to take away from his legacy. Just a final thought. Go back to this election coverage.
Yeah, I do think for young journalists starting out, if you want to find people to study, what you're studying when you study Charles Osgood is a man who always looked for the story, the narrative. You know, Mo just made a really interesting point about just the facts, ma'am, type reporting. It's always easy. Good diggers of facts are always going to work. But if you want to elevate your work to something special, find the story that those facts knit together. Dig the narrative out and then tell that in as few as words as possible, and you'll be sort of walking the same path that Charles Osgood did such a elegant and remarkable job navigating over the course of his very long and distinguished career here at CBS News.
Well, Jim Axelrod, Mo Rocca, thank you both so much for joining us, for making the time, and for honoring his legacy.
I'm happy to talk to you both. Thank you.
That was not easy to do, I'm sure, for CBS. Before we head for a break, I thought it might be good to hear from one of Charlie's colleagues. Willie Geist, I think, did movies for did movie reviews for Sunday Morning. I thought it might be kind of good to hear from him, and we'll do that ahead of the break. Just a second here.
As we say goodbye this morning, a word about the legendary host of another Sunday Morning program. Charles Osgood led the iconic CBS Sunday Morning for 22 years, a sterling chapter in his legendary career as a broadcaster. Charlie was an elegant and comforting voice to millions of Americans over the years on television and radio, and a beloved Sunday morning colleague to people like my father. Charles died this week at the age of 91. Charlie, we'll see you on the radio.
Hey, and we'll be right back. Don't miss the Today Show every week. As they say, the show must go on. One had to stop early, but one took over. They're going to be as strong as ever before. The farewell tour will still continue, and I'll still tell you about it right here on the New Directions podcast. To give you an idea of what kind of a career Mr. Osgood had, there was a segment that the Sunday Morning Show had called The Broadcast Journalist's Journey. To take us on it, the lady who succeeded Mr. Osgood in 2016, Jane Pollitt.
So how does a kid
loved baseball and radio, growing up in Baltimore, wind up on national television. Rita Braver can explain.
Here it is, right here. Nature's cooling system. The great American elm tree.
Whether describing a national
a moment. Here we go. And 5 seconds to adjust. Here we go here, fellas. For that, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We now return.
No treasure. Or deploring the plight of the homeless.
Being cold is not an abstraction, but a reality you can feel in your bones. And the only thing that matters is to escape from the cold. And now. You know what this is, of course.
Charles Osgood always wanted us to take a closer look.
See if he's there.
You rang?
And maybe in some cases to be angry or amused or sort of shake your head about this crazy world. And by the way, it is a crazy world.
Which helps explain how an economics major at Fordham University in the Bronx.
Were the call letters the same when you were here?
Yes, they were.
Ended up at the campus radio station.
I spent more time here than I did in class when you did more.
He started as a classical music DJ in Washington, D.C., but
at some point you moved to become a news reporter. What was the inspiration for that?
There was a job that was available. I knew how to get it.
His first big-time news job was at ABC.
Good morning. This is Charles Osgood, News Radio 88.
Then in 1967, he joined WCBS Radio in New York.
Well, today, Mrs. Martin is the proud possessor of a plant that towers like Jack's beanstalk, looks like a tomato plant, and is nicknamed Fred.
His distinctive style soon landed him a job at the CBS network.
The Osgood File. This is Charles Osgood.
And in 1971, he launched one of the longest-running features in radio history, what came to be known as the Osgood File.
Edward R. Murrow sure knew how to use his voice on the radio.
Several stories a day in 2-minute segments that are surprisingly complex to craft.
See you on the radio. I say that every week. Peculiar phrase, some people think Barney want to speak. I've got a piece of mail or two up on my office shelf complaining that this sentence seems to contradict itself.
Short words, short sentences, short paragraphs. There's nothing that can't be improved by making it shorter and better.
When the idea of television was presented to you, was that exciting for you or foreboding?
It scared me to death. It just about scared me to death.
Good evening. Time is running out to get the hostage prisoners.
In fact, the first time he anchored a broadcast, he got some constructive criticism from the legendary Mike Wallace.
He said, you looked like you had gone into the room to empty the wastebasket. Yes. And you looked up and you saw Walter Cronkite's chair. And so you say, oh, and you sat in the chair and you said to yourself, I hope nobody's catching me doing this. Hope nobody's watching.
But soon he realized.
Good evening. I'm Charles Osgood.
He just needed to be himself on camera.
It takes two to tango, but more than two to make for any kind of peace in the Middle East.
It's important that the audience be comfortable, and they won't be if you're not comfortable.
In 1994, Charles Osgood took over Sunday morning from the venerable Charles Kuralt.
Good morning. I'm Charles Osgood, and this is Sunday morning. I know it sounds strange to me, too, but here we are.
You've got to know that the audience came to not just accept you, but to really be very fond of you. What was that like as you started to realize that?
Well, I think if you do something every week and if you show up in their homes, then they get to know you. You know, they're not even surprised, but when you're knocking on the door and say, may I come in?
We have actors and artists, not just politicians.
Over the years, Charles Osgood took us to Cuba.
explored American architectural landmarks, even served up Thanksgiving dinner.
Sunday mornings are filled with such things. We have.
In the process, helping Sunday Morning earn multiple Emmys for Outstanding Morning Program. Through it all, he followed his own wise counsel.
Before your working years are through, I hope whatever work you do makes you happy, makes you smile. You may be at it quite a while.
The feeling is not half bad.
Jane and Rita, thank you very much. The man was a true hero. There was a side of him that not a lot of people knew, and I'm getting ready to introduce this to you, the side of the music man. And he played, from what I had learned, two instruments mainly. One of them banjo, the other, you'll hear the most of, piano. Here's a piece about Charles Osgood, the music man.
This is an interview with Chuck Berry, Roll 2.
Hammers! I'm ready, man.
Back when this explosion of popularity of rock and roll took place, you and a handful of other people were mainly...
A little break in the action here, just a second. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and we can skip this because I want to anyway. We'll go back.
What was it that caused that to happen?
They begin to hear it. You see, because certain stations played certain music. The music that we, the blacks, play, the culture was so far apart once that we would have had a slave station in order to play it. As the cultures begin to come together and you begin to see one in another's vein of life and so forth, then the music came together.
As we've said, Charles Osgood loved radio and baseball. But Charlie had another lifelong passion, his love for music. With Anthony Mason, we give another listen to some highlights of Charlie's other calling.
For 22 years, Sunday Morning didn't need a house band.
You know the song? You are my sunshine, my only sunshine.
We had Charlie. He was his own accompanist. Even in his office, you could catch Charlie at the keyboards. You've been known to stop into the Steinway showroom from time to time.
Yes, indeed.
Charlie, who owned three Steinways, fell in love with music, hearing his mother play piano at home. Piano was your first instrument.
Yes. Well, a toy piano was my first instrument. And I started playing by ear before I started taking lessons.
Did you have musical aspirations?
No, I didn't. I never thought that I would be a professional pianist, and I don't think I could get the job being one even today.
But music's always had a leading role in his life. In 1955, when he was about to be drafted into the Army, he met an officer in dress blues.
He said, I'm a member of the United States Army Band. And I said, what instrument do you play? He said, I'm the announcer. Dong. So I said, when do you get out? And he said, next month.
He saw a job opening. He would serve 3 years as the Army Band's announcer.
The president, who is making a rapid recovery.
When President Eisenhower was recovering from a heart attack at Walter Reed Army Hospital, Charlie was enlisted to be his personal disc jockey.
I was put into a studio with a stack of records that had all been chosen as his favorites. And I spent most of the day playing records for Eisenhower.
Charlie started writing songs, too.
I don't think most people know that you had a top 40 hit.
Well, it's true, though.
Down through the years.
Working with John Kakavas, who he'd met in the U.S. Army band, he wrote a tribute to America's fighting forces that in 1966 was recorded by Senator Everett Dirksen.
He couldn't play anything, he couldn't sing anything, so he recited those lyrics.
There have been men.
Down through the years, there have been men, old down men, who have died that others might be free.
That others might be free.
By January 1967, gallant men had climbed to number 29, one spot above Wild Thing.
What did you think as this thing started climbing the charts?
Well, I was delighted. I think he was delighted, too.
In the 60s, he also wrote a song called Black is Beautiful. Nancy Wilson recorded it and later sang it with him on Sunday morning.
Black is so beautiful, it makes you cry.
My sunshine, my only soul.
As host of Sunday morning, Charlie was able to explore his wildest musical fantasies. He performed at the Grand Ole Opry and played banjo with the Boston Pops. He played the organ at Yankee Stadium. And other exotic instruments.
It's actually half a piano and half a zither. Well, you're one of about 20 people who have played a dulciola. Yeah.
I'm dreaming of a wise Christmas.
And he'd end every year with a Christmas carol, often solo, sometimes with special guests.
Play along.
Charles Osgood always understood the enduring power of music at transitional moments in our lives, as he himself explained in a 1995 story on the anniversary of VE Day.
With every parting, there was always the fear that it might be, the hope that it would not be the last parting. Maybe that is why the song that Vera Lynn used to sing became an anthem that even to this day can bring tears to the eyes of many an old soldier.
So play it again, Charlie.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
And now, here with a tribute to Charles Osgood, is the United States Army Band and Chorus.
And on that note, we'll be right back. He's performed with his friends for over 50 years. But that's not the only group he performs for. He has a family, and a very big one at that. And they're coming, guys. William Lee Golden is bringing his three sons, a few grandchildren, and an all-star band to a concert venue near you. They're not just country. They're not just rock and roll. They're not just gospel either. They do it all. And they do it all very, very well. So follow the Hillbilly Highway and find the Goldens coming to a theater near you. Next time on the podcast, unfortunately, I have another tribute to do, and this time it's of Toby Keith. He had been diagnosed with stomach cancer late last year, I believe. But unfortunately, he lost his battle with it at age 62. So next time on the podcast, I'm going to be remembering him. A lot of songs. A lot of hits that I may not have known that he had. A lot of people didn't know either. But we're going to try to have a celebration of life, because a lot of music touched a lot of us. I'll put as much of them together as I can next time here on the podcast. Charles Osgood, come to find out, and I had a lot in common. We both like baseball. We both like music. And when I first started this podcast, actually, when I first got back into internet radio, I subconsciously found myself saying, "See you on the radio." And I knew, as I mentioned to my brother, that it was a tribute to Charles Osgood. But he said, "See you next Sunday morning, and then until then, I'll see you on the radio." But that's neither here nor there. Some time ago, I had had a book of Charles Osgood's, which was called "See You on the Radio." And he wrote a poem about why he said that for so long. And I want to use this as kind of my final thoughts. Before I get into it, that's going to wind things up for this edition of the New Directions podcast. Thank you for being with me as always. See you next time as we remember Toby Keith. I got two ways to get us out of here, mine and his. His poem is called "See You on the Radio." See you on the radio, I say that every week. A peculiar phrase, some people think, for anyone to speak. I've got a piece of mail or two up on my office shelf, complaining that the sentence seems to contradict itself. "Dear Mr. Osgood," someone wrote, "that sign-off is absurd. Radio is for the ear, the song, or spoken word. The medium for seeing us, without a doubt, TV. We therefore call it video. That's Latin for I see. So please don't say that anymore. You really should know better. That's a general paraphrase for what was in this viewer's letter." "Dear sir," I then wrote back to him, and this was my reply. "I do believe that you are wrong, and let me tell you why. I've worked some years in radio and television, too, and though it's paradoxical, it nonetheless is true. That radio is visual, much more so than TV. And there's plenty of good reason, why that paradox should be. You insist that on the radio there are no pictures there. You say it's only for the ear, but I say, au contraire. There are fascinating pictures on the radio, you see, that are far more picturesque than any pictures on TV. No television set that's made, no screen that you can find, can compare to with that of radio, the theater of the mind, where the pictures are so vivid, so spectacular and real, that there isn't any contest, or at least that's how I feel. The colors are more colorful, the reds and greens and blues, and more vivid yet more subtle than television's hues. The dimensions of the radio are truly to be treasured, infinite the size of screen diagonally measured. With resolution so acute, TV cannot compare. We can whisper in the listener's ear and take him anywhere. And you tell me that I cannot see the audience I touch? Let me tell you now my secret. My experience is such that although the room I work in may be very plain and small, in a way that's quite miraculous, it isn't small at all. I am there inside the radio, the one beside the bed, and it's me you hear when it goes off. Come on now, sleepyhead. I can see you in the morning. I could see you coast to coast as you sip your glass of orange juice and bite into your toast. I am with you as you brush your teeth and as you shave your face. You may think that you are alone, but I am with you every place. And I see the lines of traffic stretching endlessly for miles. Not 100 or 1,000 miles. 1,000,000 there must be. And I'm riding along with them. That this is radio, you see. And I'm on the Jersey Turnpike, on the Thoroughway and the Hutch, and the Eisenhower Expressway, helping people keep in touch. And the California freeways and the Houston traffic funnel. I may have you lose you for a little while as you go through the tunnel. But suddenly I'm there again. Some episode to tell. To nobody's surprise, because they know me very well. For my voice is with them every day, and when it disappears, they know it comes right back again. It's been that way for years. I've been riding with them every day for such a long, long time. They are willing to put up with me when I resort to rhyme. And that may be the ultimate and quintessential test that proves, beyond the slightest doubt, that radio is best. A friend will always stick with you, though your poems may not scan. I'll see you on the radio. I can, you see. I can. He wrote that in 1999. Mr. Osgood, thanks for the memories. And I'll see you on the radio. The heavenly one, at least.
I've seen that face before. The face that I see in the mirror. I know that face. I've seen that face before. I knew that dopey guy. When he didn't know how to tie a bow tie, he stood right there, and he had hair galore. Man in the looking glass, who can he be? Man in the looking glass, can he possibly be me? Where's our young Romeo, that lad who used to sigh? Who's this elderly Lothario with a twinkle in his eye? He seems so much wiser now, less lonely, but then could be he's only pretending again. Man in the looking glass, smiling away. How's your sacroiliac today? Where's that first love affair? The tragedy d'amour, the one that you thought would be the end of you for sure. Man in the looking glass, have no regrets. The man who's wise never forgets that life is worth living if once in a while you can look in that looking glass and smile.